You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and we are going to get right into it today. Today is the final installment of our AL East crossover episodes here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And today we preview the final team we haven't gotten to yet. That is the upstart and exciting Toronto Blue Jays. And AJ Andrews, the host of Locked On Blue Jays here on the Locked On Podcast Network, is going to join us on the pod once again today for a crossover episode looking at the Orioles and the Blue Jays. With the Jays, they're up first. We will talk about all of the new guys they have in, including Marcus Semien and George Springer, and how they're going to get all those guys into the lineup. We talk about the bullpen, not a lot of known names, but a lot of good stuff in there. And we talk about why Randall Grichuk will unfortunately continue to kill the Orioles. Then we talk about the O's a little bit, talk about the O's starting rotation, all the options that they have, and also what they will do at second base this season. And finally, we end with some bold predictions for both teams. So it's all coming up right now with AJ Andrews, the host of Locked On Blue Jays. All right, so AJ, on this crossover episode, we start by learning a little bit about the Blue Jays. And, you know, this is a team that I think a lot of people, obviously not just Blue Jays fans, but across baseball, are very excited about this season. So I think my first question about the Blue Jays is kind of an all-encompassing question. That is, what is the excitement level compared to, you know, what it's been the last 4 or 5 years for the Blue Jays going into 2021?
Well, Connor, I think the excitement level's been building a little bit. I think people, when the front office came in, they knew there was a plan. There was a plan to rebuild. There was a plan to try and get a core together that they thought would be able to compete. And you started to see that excitement a little bit last year. It got actual momentum when, you know, they finished above 500, which, I mean, we weren't expecting that. We weren't expecting a playoff appearance. Would have liked it to go a little better, but what can you do? They got in there. That's the main thing. So I think now, especially with the off-season signings of George Springer and Marcus Semien, there's a lot of a palpable excitement and expectation of competing that hasn't been seen since 2016. And like 2016 is really the only season in my recent memory that the Blue Jays actually got to enjoy that feeling, because 2015 came out of nowhere. We're like Troy Tulowitzki, David Price, what the heck's going on? We're winning. I don't know this. So 2016, we actually did expect it. So there's kind of that feeling yet. It's a bit muted because, I mean, they're going to be spending the first 2 months in Dunedin. So what's it going to really do for the community? But there's still an expectation, I think, with this team that's been missing the past few years as we've been waiting for this rebuild to finally catch up and get to the point where you can start talking about division titles, maybe.
So, you know, obviously the Blue Jays had a big offseason. You mentioned George Springer and Marcus Semien come in. You know, they made some a little lesser moves, you know, bringing in Steven Matz and, you know, re-signing Robbie Ray, but all things they feel like are going to make this team better going into this season. I do want to ask about the position players, though, because when you look at this team and, you know, Bichette, Biggio, Guerrero, you know, all coming back on this squad, you have, you know, Grichuk and Gurriel, you know, and Hernandez all still in the outfield. Is there anyone who, you know, between the guys they brought in and the starters who are returning, you know, it seems like they have more than 9 players right now that deserve frequent at-bats. So do you think there will be guys who kind of get lost, or is it going to turn into like a Rays situation where every day is a different lineup, basically?
Connor, it's a beautiful feeling knowing that, you know, we're going to be able to look at this team and not have to go like, oh, well, I guess they have to play Ryan Goins today. Or, you know, oh, I guess Socrates Brito is getting another start in the outfield. Joy. It's a much better feeling than having to see those names. Knowing there's full-on depth at the major league level is part of why this team is exciting. There's not a hole anymore. Like, it's not going to be an off day where you see guys who, you know, you're going to fade away. Randall Grichuk's our fourth outfielder. He hit like double-digit home runs last season in an abbreviated season. Joe Panik's back as our utility infielder. And even then, oh, Bo Bichette's off. Oh, that's no, Simeon's over at shortstop now, so you're not going to get that break either. And aside from maybe Danny Jansen at catcher, there's not an obvious hole in this lineup. So it's going to be a grind to face the Blue Jays every time. There's not going to be a bit of rest for these opposing teams. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to see. I don't know if they're going to go full Rays and just like rotate guys in and out. They may do that to get at bats for Grichuk. But I actually don't see him as getting the majority of the at bats. I think Rowdy Tellez gets those at DH. So Grichuk's going to have to rotate in. But it's just nice to be able to see that and know that we don't have to give Anthony Alford playing time. We don't have to give Jonathan Davis playing time. Jonathan Davis earned his playing time. These guys have earned their spot. We're not giving them out just because, hey, they're warm bodies. They happen to be here.
Yeah, and you know what? If, you know, Randall Grichuk has to be out of the lineup against the Orioles, you know, I'm going to be totally fine with that. I think all Orioles fans are going to be totally fine with that.
No. That's our plan. Because I talked about this with Gab on the Red Sox crossover. We're starting Grichuk against Baltimore. We're starting Rowdy Tellez against Boston. Because those two guys have their favorite opponents. And, you know, it's like Pokemon. They're super effective against your Orioles. So,
Orioles fans, you know, they saw the George Springer move and thought, man, there's too many outfielders. Hopefully they'll trade Randall Grichuk. It never happened. He's still there. And here we are. But I did want to ask you about the pitching as well, because I think this is a very kind of underrated starting rotation, because Ryu, since leaving the Dodgers, you know, I think he had less eyes on him, but he's quietly, you know, been better in some senses with the Blue Jays. And, you know, Nate Pearson is obviously, you know, this top pitcher. But, you know, for the second straight year, it seems like, the Blue Jays have a lot of guys in the bullpen who nobody really knows, but are quietly pretty good. So who are kind of a couple of names in the bullpen where your average baseball fan isn't going to know their name, but they're going to be, you know, the setup man or the closer, and they're going to get a lot of outs for the Blue Jays this year?
Oh, thank you for not focusing on the rotation. I don't want to talk about Tanner Roark right now. Guys in the bullpen who are going to be surprising. I think one name that, you know, Orioles fans might remember, but then kind of got lost in the shuffle, was Tim Mayza, who was the Blue Jays lefty option prior to Ryan Borucki moving into the bullpen. He tore his UCL late September 2019, had Tommy John surgery, and they didn't know if he was going to be back. He came back spring training this year, has been lights out, only given up one hit, two walks and one hit batter in 6 2/3 innings. He's got a whip of 0.45. He earned a spot in that bullpen out of spring training. And again, it was not handed to him. He had to go out there and take it, and take it he did. So having that second lefty in the pen for sure is going to be a huge boost. Trent Thornton coming back and being the long man in that rotation with the injuries to Nate Pearson and Robbie Ray to start, that's also a big thing. Thornton's looked really good in spring. He's only given up three hits and one walk in 7 innings of work. He struck out 11. Like, that's a K rate we haven't seen out of Trent Thornton yet during his time as a starter. So just the sheer amount of depth that the Blue Jays have put together, where guys like Thornton are going to be in the bullpen. Guys like Julian Merriweather are going to be in the bullpen throwing 98. Like, even with Kirby Yates needing Tommy John, this bullpen's still very dangerous. You don't want to face Jordan Romano and that slider. You don't want to face Rafael Dolis and that splitter. There's so many different looks that can come out of this bullpen. Tyler Chatwood's looked really good. Tyler Chatwood. If I mentioned his name to a Cubs fan, they would spit in disgust the way Tyler Chatwood would pitch for them. But he's looked really good in the Blue Jays bullpen. And that's a credit to Pete Walker and the work he's been able to do as the pitching coach. But like, everyone is deadly right now. And it's, again, it's nice to be able to say that, well, you know, we got to throw out Ryan Feerabend, or we got to throw out Cesar Valdez. Oh, wait, you guys have Cesar Valdez now. I'm sorry. I take that back.
And we love him.
I know you do. It's weird, but hey, you find something you love, you hold on to it, Connor.
But, you know, that seems to be kind of the theme for the Blue Jays, as you talked about. They have so much more depth than they've had the past couple of years. And, you know, if guys are injured, guys are tired, they've got major league caliber starting guys, major league caliber bullpen guys ready to go. behind them. But, you know, a team that doesn't have as much depth is the Orioles, and we are going to get to them here on this crossover episode in just a second. But first, got to tell you about Built Bar. Now, we've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. And now it's time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It is Built Bar Madness. And in the bracket, we are into the flavorful four, just four flavors remaining. AJ, it is mint brownie versus coconut brownie chunk. Now, I am not a huge fan of mint flavored things, although this Built Bar is good. I'm going to go coconut brownie chunk. Who would you vote for between these two, mint brownie and coconut brownie chunk?
See, I'm kind of torn because I've been championing mint brownie for a while, and I'm happy it got here, but it cannot compare to coconut brownie. Like, brownie in anything is good. Like, baked goods is great. It's why your other matchup was all cookie, but brownie with coconut, it's just so many good thick flavors together that it just works so well. I gotta vote for brownie. That brownie, the coconut brownie, works better than the mint brownie, especially with the chunks of brownie in there. It's just satisfying on every level.
So we're on the same page there. If you agree, or if you want to go with mint brownie, you can cast your vote over at builtbar.com or go to @bar_built on Twitter to vote as well. And remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com, and check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. Now, before we get to the Orioles, got to tell you about another podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. You can get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast or on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And AJ, now it is time to learn about the Orioles.
Learn we shall. That will be the thing we do today on this Locked On episode, this crossover episode with the Blue Jays. And what the first thing I want to learn, Connor, y'all DFA'd Yolmer Sanchez earlier this spring. So you're basically rolling without a second baseman. I mean, you have Ryan Mountcastle. He looks like he's going to be at first base. Good spot for him. You have Freddie Galvis, who Blue Jays fans are familiar with. He's going to be at short. You have Michael Franco, which, okay, bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out. Him at third. What are you doing at second base? Is it Pavelica? Like what's the plan with this Orioles outfield? Like it just seems like, aside from Mountcastle, it's just trying to like cycle through guys who couldn't get multi-year deals on the open market.
Yeah, so right now, you know, among Orioles young players who are kind of ready for the big leagues, it's most barren at second, short, and third base, which is why the Orioles decided to go out and give out one-year deals basically to three veterans who have been around: Michael Franco, Freddie Galvis, and Yolmer Sanchez. And the plan was, you know, our infield prospects aren't quite ready yet. Let's give them another year, and let's bring in some veteran guys who have been in the big leagues for the past, you know, each of them have been in the big leagues the last 5+ years with some experience to help this younger team. Galvis seeming to work out. Franco seeming to work out. They're going to be starters. Sanchez just wasn't showing it in spring training. The bat, you know, he's always been a glove first guy, but it was really tough to watch sometimes with the bat. And the Orioles just looked around at, you know, some of the other, you know, not as young, but, you know, still kind of young options they had at second base and said, you know what, it's going to benefit us more to give these guys a chance because we don't think it's much of a difference from Yolmer Sanchez. So we don't know. We don't think there's going to be, you know, a set everyday second baseman at this point, unless they go out and maybe sign a Rougned Odor, which is a possibility. But at this point, you have three names. You have Pat Valleca, who you mentioned, you know, he's going to play all around the diamond as kind of a backup infielder, but, you know, he hits lefties well. He'll play some second base. Then you've got Rio Ruiz, who lost his third base job to Michael Franco, but played the last three spring training games starting at second base. So the Orioles are trying to maybe give him a chance there. And then you have Ramon Urias, who is a young infielder who made his debut last year. Orioles got him from the Cardinals last year. They're kind of intrigued by him. You know, he was a prospect for a little while with the Cardinals, not super highly ranked, but kind of, you know, people knew about him in the Cardinals system. Orioles are really intrigued by him. He initially wasn't going to be on the opening day roster, but after getting rid of Sanchez, that basically freed up a spot for Urias. He's going to get his shot. I think he might start on opening day, and it'll be interesting to see what he can do.
I'm sorry, I had to choke back a bit of laughter remembering that Rougned Odor got DFA'd. just brings a smile to my face. You mentioned earlier about how you wanted to see Randall Grichuk traded away just because what he does against the Orioles. That guy for me on Baltimore is Trey Mancini, and just every game Trey has against the Blue Jays, he just gets up for it. He's got 2 for 4. He's got an RBI. He's got 2 runs scored. He just does everything at the plate against the Blue Jays. And while I didn't want to face him last year, I did not want it to go down the way it did. I'm very happy that he's made a full recovery from the cancer diagnosis. I'm thrilled to see him back out there. He was a big part of the offense in 2019 that wasn't bad. It was like major league average offense. Whether the expectations for Mancini coming back from this, and can he, you know, provide some pop and get that Orioles offense back up to a point where, you know, guys like Anthony Santander and Austin Hayes can try and set the table a little bit and make this offense more productive.
Yeah, you know, for a while there last year without Mancini, you know, the Orioles were playing pretty good baseball, and they did enough in the first half of last season where they actually didn't finish in last year. You know, they ended up in fourth, a game ahead of the Red Sox. And if you just think, you know, Trey Mancini was their best player in 2019. He was probably an all-star snub, had the best season of his career. If they have him in that lineup every day last year, the Orioles are probably sniffing pretty close to a 500 record, which is pretty compelling considering when you look at the talent or lack thereof that was on the roster in 2020. So to have him back in a 162 game season, it's going to be great for the Orioles. And listen, you know, he is healthy. He's ready to go. He's going to be the opening day starting first baseman. You know, he'll DH some, he'll play a little bit of outfield as well this year, but the Orioles, I still don't think they know exactly what they're going to get from him because, you know, he just went through a year of cancer treatment and, you know, was just getting back to baseball activity over the winter. And so, you know, he's not going to play every single day. Brandon Hyde has already said, you know, he's going to be a situation at least early in the season where, you know, he'll play 2 days in a row, then get 1 day off, play 2 days in a row, get 1 day off. It helps that they have a guy like Ryan Mountcastle, who you mentioned, who kind of plays all the same positions as Mancini. You know, he plays first base, he plays left field, and he can DH. The Orioles have a couple of guys like that make it a little easier that they can just fill right in for Trey. And, you know, I'd love to see him get back to what he did in 2019. I'm not sure that'll happen, but I think he's still going to be a good major league hitter as he gets that strength back. And then really look at him like after the All-Star break. Like once he gets kind of that half season under his belt, he starts to get back into the rhythm of playing every day instead of, you know, 1 day off after 2 days in. That's when I think you'll see the true Trey Mancini come back out and start to play at that All-Star level. I mean, I think if he plays anywhere near that level, he's going to be a shoe-in for AL Comeback Player of the Year, obviously. And, you know, if he's in there hitting well and some of these, you know, up-and-coming guys the Orioles have are doing it. We know the pitching is going to be an issue for the Orioles, but this offense, you know, like you mentioned in 2019, isn't going to be the reason that they lose, you know, 90-plus games. As the same thing in 19, it's still been a pretty watchable offense, and Mancini obviously was and will be a big part of that.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned the pitching, Connor. I'm so glad you brought that up unprompted. Let's talk about the Orioles pitching. When I was reading about the Orioles heading into this spring training, there were talks of Felix Hernandez and Matt Harvey being 2 and 3 in the Orioles rotation. And I mean, that would have been great in like 2015, but this is 2021. And Matt Harvey has basically floated between teams, racking up jerseys like Mike Morgan. Felix Hernandez was released due to his elbow issues. Y'all acquired Adam Plutko from Cleveland. I'm like, is Adam Plutko their number 3? Who do they have? But it seems like the plan is to go young. Bruce Zimmerman and Dean Kramer are going to be in the rotation. What can you expect out of this rotation? I mean, behind John Means, who's been, you know, a serviceable major league pitcher, what can you expect out of this motley crew that you have for an Orioles rotation?
Yeah, I think the Orioles have gone with the plan that, you know, it's going to be, you know, a lot of a lot of different guys are going to get starts. And some of that has to do with the fact that they don't have, you know, five legitimate proven starting pitchers, obviously. And some of it also has to do with the fact that when you ramp up from a 60 game to a 162 game season, you're going to need more pitchers than you usually do. And I think a lot of teams are kind of taking that, but the Orioles are going to a little bit of an extreme. Now they do have a set starting rotation. You start with John Means, who's going to be, you know, he's not a ace in baseball, but he is the Orioles ace. Was an all-star a couple years ago. He's still taking next steps. He's getting better and better. And I think he's going to surprise some people this year. Matt Harvey's going to start game two. And I don't think I would have been saying that at the beginning of spring training, but everything that, you know, kept him down when he was with the Angels and the Royals and at the end of the time with the Mets, he finally, you know, you read these reports and basically he finally realized that he isn't Matt Harvey of old this offseason. That's what kind of clicked for him. He finally realized I need to seek some outside help, some other opinions. I need to change who I am, because I think he looked at back-to-back seasons of 10 plus ERAs and said, this isn't working. And so I don't think he's going to be, you know, peak Mets Matt Harvey, but his velocity's up. His breaking stuff looks better. His control looks better. And I think he's at the very least back to a major league average pitcher and potentially a little better. And for the Orioles, he could do that, potentially get flipped at the deadline. Behind that, that is where you have this giant group of pitchers who are going to be shuffling in and out, basically. And if some of them grab a rotation spot and pitch well enough to do so, they're going to hold on to that spot. You mentioned Dean Kramer, you know, had a good start to his career last year. Bruce Zimmerman made two appearances last year as a rookie. He has been the Orioles' best pitcher in spring training. He won a spot. Jorge Lopez has the final spot in the rotation. He's kind of a right-hander ground ball pitcher who's been on a couple teams. The Orioles see a lot from him because he throws a 96 mile per hour sinker, just doesn't always know where it's going. So they're trying to hone that in a little bit. And then behind him, you know, Felix Hernandez could always be back, you know, as a free agent if that elbow gets better. He's only throwing about 85 now, but he's still Felix Hernandez and at least knows how to throw strikes. Wade LeBlanc is on this team as kind of a long man, swing man. You look, you know, further into the bullpen. Keegan Aiken, who was in the Oriole rotation last year, had some big command problems this spring. He's actually going to start the year at the alternate site, but he's going to be up at some point. And then you mentioned Adam Pletko. You know, he's going to start out of the bullpen because, you know, he's coming in a little late. They got to ramp him up to being back to a starter. So he's going to start the year as a long man, but he's going to get some starts as well. And, you know, they kept their two Rule 5 picks, Tyler Wells and Max Soroller. Both of them have been starters in the minor league. So they have all these options where, you know, there might even be days where it looks more like a college baseball game where somebody starts the game, pitches four innings, the reliever comes in and pitches three innings, and then you have another reliever come in and pitch two innings, and that's your day for the Baltimore Orioles. And so, you know, they have Means as the guy who's good, Harvey as the guy who's been there, and then still a lot of question marks. So we will see how it all plays out.
Yeah. One quick final thing before we move into our final segment. Hunter Harvey going on a 60-day IL seems like a pretty bad thing. I know Tyler Wells is not a guy who you want to put back there because, as you said, he seemed like a starter. He has starter stuff. You don't want to use that up on a closer. But with the injury to Harvey, and I mean, they said, you know, he was being reevaluated. Like, I'm not sure how long it's going to be, but what does that bullpen look like without Hunter Harvey? Is Cesar Valdez your closer, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Harvey's been injured most of his time at the big leagues. And even though everyone thinks he's the Oriole closer of the future, it's hard to think that with how long he's been injured. And it's an oblique injury. He's going to be out for a while. So at this point, Cesar Valdez finished last year as the Oriole closer. And to me, I know he throws 90% a 78 mile per hour changeup that he calls the dead fish. But to me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I think they're going to send him back out there. He'll be a guy who gets a lot of, you know, six out saves. Behind him, Tanner Scott, left-hander, throws, you know, 98, 99, good slider. He's kind of the guy they're grooming to be the closer in the next year or so. And then besides that, the Orioles have a lot of kind of plug and play, you know, relievers. And, you know, there might not be an official closer. You might see a guy like, you know, Paul Fry get a chance. Cole Sulcer gets some chances. Dylan Tate gets some chances. Sean Armstrong gets some chances. It's going to be a lot of different names in there getting their shot to close some games. But if you had to ask me, you know, who would be the leader in saves, I would say probably Cesar Valdez or Tanner Scott would be those kind of best two relievers right now at the end of the bullpen.
Maybe Chris Davis can be your reliever. Maybe then you'll get some value out of him.
That, you know what, at this point in Chris Davis's career, I got to say he probably has more value as a pitcher than as a hitter. But AJ, we'll get to our kind of bold predictions at the end here in a second, but first got to tell you about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Now, you know, baseball does start tomorrow, but even before that, we've got the NBA, we've got the NHL, and of course, college basketball with the Final Four coming up this weekend. You can bet on it all over at betonline.ag, but it's not just sports. BetOnline even covers award shows, TV shows, and reality TV. They've got real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and best of all, it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON. You can get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And now before we get to our bold predictions here at the end of the podcast, the Locked On MLB Division Preview Series continues on Locked On MLB today. Every episode from now until the 31st features in-depth looks at each team in every division. It's all on the Locked On MLB podcast feed right now. Follow Locked On MLB on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So AJ, as we finish up here, just wanted to kind of get, you know, record predictions for each team and then one breakout player from each team that we think could really surprise some people. So, you know, I'm going to start with you and ask you, you know, with all the moves the Blue Jays have made, getting off the momentum they had last year to get to the playoffs, what do you think this record will be for the Blue Jays? And, you know, with that, do you think they get in the postseason this year?
Well, I've been discussing this with my fellow AL East hosts all month. And if you want to check those out, go back to some of our crossover Wednesday episodes on the Locked On Podcast Network. Consensus seems to be the Yankees and the Blue Jays are the ones to, you know, battle it out for the crown. Now, Kevin Weiss of Locked On Rays will try and convince you that the Rays still have a chance, but show me something on offense and then maybe I'll believe it. Not with G-Man Choi out, you don't. So that's going to be the thing. It's a cliche thing to say, you know, if they stay healthy, you know, it'll be their season, but that's just going to be it. It's going to be about who stays healthy. And the Blue Jays have not been doing that so far. Kirby Yates gone for the season. Nate Pearson dealing with a groin strain. George Springer, oblique injury. Robbie Ray slips on some stairs while holding his kid and hurts his elbow. There's been a lot to deal with so far. Thomas Hatch has inflammation. So how each team deals with it is going to be key to success, but the Blue Jays do have enough depth. I mean, Robbie Ray's out. TJ Zoik made the team out of spring training because he's looked really good and looked really adept at keeping the ball on the ground, which is going to be key for them playing in Dunedin, which is a majorly hitter's park. Like, balls just fly out of there. So that depth is going to be key. I think the Blue Jays have better depth than the Yankees, and that's why I'm actually higher on them than some of my compatriots. I think if Robbie Ray comes back and shows his spring form, and if Steven Matz keeps up what he's been doing in spring training, looking really good, looking fully healthy, looking dominant, I think the Blue Jays win the division. I think they do it with, I'm going to say 91 wins. I think the Yankees get slowed down a bit by the injury to Luke Voit and the fact that Corey Kluber does not look like Corey Kluber. So I think they finish at like 89 wins. And I think the Blue Jays actually do take this division. It's going to be weaker than people think, but I think the Blue Jays win this division outright.
Yeah. The Orioles fans, I think, would love to see that. Much rather see that than, you know, the Yankees or, I don't think the Red Sox have a chance, but obviously the Red Sox winning the division.
Red Sox don't have a chance.
Yeah. No. But on the Orioles side, I think most people know this team's going to finish in fifth. You know, they're going to be around the conversation for having the worst record, having number one pick in the 2022 draft. I don't think they're the worst team. I think if you look at rosters, you know, I think the Pirates roster is worse. I think once the Rockies make a couple more trades, their roster is definitely going to be worse. And, you know, especially since they have to play the Dodgers and the Padres all the time. And I do think, you know, even maybe a little quietly, the Rangers roster at some point could be considered worse. And the Tigers, you know, is only a little bit better than the Orioles. But the O's do have to play the Yankees a lot. And a team like the Pirates plays in the worst division while the Orioles play in a much better division. I'm thinking somewhere you know, in the high 60s, potentially maybe low 70s. I do think they avoid 100 losses on the season, which will be good. But, you know, as we finish up here, AJ, I just wanted to ask you, do you have one breakout player you think will surprise people in the Blue Jays this year?
See, this is a difficult question, Connor, because there's not a lot of players that I don't think are already very well known by MLB fans at large. I mean, I can be very boring and say, oh, it's going to be Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette's going to have a big year. Vladdy is going to have an MVP year. Like, but y'all know those names. So I'm going to go with one that I know Blue Jays fans love, but he may not be as well known to the MLB community at large. And I'm going to say Alejandro Kirk. Kirk is a young catcher, 22 years old. He made the leap from single A to MLB baseball last year, got in 9 games, hit 375. He's on the major league team to start. He beat out Reese McGuire, which, I mean, that's like beating out the Orioles in the AL East. I'm sorry, but I had to say it. But Kirk just does not strike out. He puts bat on ball. He sends it all over the place. He's like a better version of Williams Astudillo from Minnesota. And he's a lot better defensively than people give him credit for. He was working exclusively with Robbie Ray during spring training. He's caught Hyunjin Ryu during side sessions. He's getting work with all the main pitchers that are going to be in the rotation. And to me, that's a sign that, you know, this may be more like a 60-40 split to start the season with Danny Jansen, but I think that's going to edge up as Kirk's bat becomes more and more important to making that lineup just, you know, a complete unit, as opposed to Danny Jansen, who, aside from getting a couple long balls that were ultimately meaningless against Tampa Bay in the playoffs, did not show a lot offensively and continues to not show a lot offensively. His spring training did not go well for him, which, you know, he had to have a better spring than he did to cement that role. But I think Kirk's going to be able to take more and more playing time, and you could see rookie of the year ballots thrown Alejandro Kirk's way at the end of the season, because Danny Jansen and that 152 spring batting average ain't threatening.
So for the Orioles side to finish up, I'm going to go, you know, there's plenty of guys I could go with who we've talked about, but I'm actually going to go with someone who hasn't been mentioned yet on this podcast, on this crossover episode so far, and that's Cedric Mullins, who is going to be on the Orioles roster, an outfielder who's been up for a couple years. But, you know, he's never really had a full-time starting spot. And, you know, he might not even have that this year because, you know, the Orioles have so much outfield depth with Santander, Mountcastle, Austin Hayes already out there. You got DJ Stewart. But Mullins has played well enough this spring. He actually used to be a switch hitter, but he was a horrendous right-handed hitter and, you know, a pretty solid left-handed hitter. He decided this spring, I'm done switch hitting. I'm just going to be a left-handed hitter. It has paid off. All of his batting numbers are better because him hitting from the right side was frankly weighing him down, and he's gotten a lot of hits lefty on lefty, so it doesn't seem to be a huge problem for him. He's got good speed. He's a great defender. He can play all three outfield positions, and I think he's really going to help this team. And, you know, with this long season, there's going to be injuries. Guys might be moved, whatever. I don't think he's going to play 160 games, but I think he's going to get enough of a chance where he shows how valuable he can be. And, you know, who knows if he's a future piece for the Orioles or not. But, you know, him and Austin Hayes have both really excited me as the center fielders this spring. And I think it'll be an exciting season for Cedric Mullins. But AJ, definitely going to be an exciting baseball season, probably more so for the Blue Jays than for the Orioles. But, you know, yeah. Great crossover episode here. Connor Newcomb from Locked On Orioles, AJ Andrews from Locked On Blue Jays. And I think we just end this by saying, and I'm sure you'll agree, I cannot wait until opening day tomorrow.
I'm ready for it. It's been a long time coming. Let's do this.